Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, continuing our thoughts about Christmas, which we're trying to get into the mood, although the weather's 70 degrees, I know it's a little tough sometimes, but we got to keep our fingers crossed to hope that some snow and cold weather is right around the corner. I hope that's the case. A little essay written by Virginia Gerst, who was a arts editor and restaurant critic living in Chicago. She writes an essay entitled, "The Best Gifts Are Not Under the Tree." Virginia writes, "Knocking the holidays has become a national pastime right up there with football. Wherever people gather, from dinner parties to corner bars, from business meetings to bus stops, you hear the same refrain. Christmas is too commercial. Christmas is too hectic. Christmas spells stress. Humbug. Despite what the Scrooges say, Christmas brings countless gifts, and the best of them aren't found beneath a tree." Of course, holiday gloominess is a well-reported fact. It seizes many who are alone and many who would rather be alone than spend time with families they don't much like. Our sympathies are with them. But Christmas cheers far more people than it depresses. It puts a spring into the steps and gladdens the hearts of millions around the world. Christmas reminds the faithful that God is with them and that in the darkest time of year there is light. It brings families and friends together for celebrations and strangers together for community sings and tree lighting ceremonies. It keeps children on their toes because Santa is coming to town. Christmas is, above all, a selfless holiday. It's about kindness and caring and helping those less fortunate. When else during the year do we hear so much talk about peace and goodwill? At Christmas, we open our hearts and our pocketbooks to those in need. We contribute what we can, from pennies to sizable sums, to toy drives, food drives, and fund drives administered by churches, social service agencies, and private organizations almost too numerous to count. Of course, not all our giving is to the needy. Christmas is commercial, and there is no way around it. By October, holiday merchandise is stacked deep on department store shelves. We crowd shopping malls and Main Street and surf the internet for gifts, but we are not on some personal feeding frenzy. We are shopping for others, not ourselves. And what's so bad about that? This is not about narcissism. We're remembering our friends and family in a special way. We're stopping by to see them with a gift, and it makes us feel good to do so. Christmas means the joy of traditions, the annual glow of holiday lights along Michigan Avenue or up and down your block, a cup of eggnog by the fire, and shiny ornaments on the Christmas tree. Are all holiday pleasures straight from a Thomas Nast drawing by way of Courier Knives that we savor this day? Christmas is the excitement of that once-a-year family outing to A Christmas Carol, or The Nutcracker, both of which we'll be talking to about our show today. A special dress-up occasion, or the simple pleasures found staying home to watch A Charlie Brown Christmas in jammies with a bowl of popcorn. It's the delight of watching small children wake up on Christmas morning and make straight for the living room to see what wonders Santa has brought. Christmas is the family ritual of decorating the Christmas tree. It's unwrapping the ornaments and finding that special treasure that belonged to your grandmother. It is making connections with the past. And Christmas is about music, perhaps more than any other single factor. Music expresses the joy, the spirit, and the elation of the season. The faithful gather in churches to join their voices in Silent Night, O Little Town of Bethlehem, and other hymns proclaiming the birth of the Christ child. People of all denominations, or no denomination at all, who don't sing a note at other times of year, tune up for secular favorites such as Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and smile broadly while they're at it. A friend who is firmly in the Christmas is stressful camp softened when she spoke of attending a performance of Handel's Messiah in Orchestra Hall at Symphony Center, and watching from her balcony seat as the entire audience, observing tradition, rose to its feet for the first note of the Hallelujah chorus. She called it thrilling. Here is a sampling of Christmas's other gifts. Some are serious, some less so, but there is not a piece of coal among them. Christmas sends us hurrying to write Christmas cards, one of the few remaining occasions in this computer age when we actually put pen to paper to keep up with friends. It's a chance to make cookies with the kids and to eat our fill. Christmas movies are better than summer movies. Christmas means 2 weeks off from school, a nice gift for teachers and students. Christmas keeps tree farmers in business, and it bolsters the U.S. Postal Service, too. It's the one time of year when we can wear red and green together. In fact, there are as many reasons to love Christmas as there are lights on the tree in Daly Plaza. So, relax, all ye who disparage the holiday. Let the only red you see this year be the red of Santa's jacket. Have a merry, merry Christmas. From Virginia Gerst, "The Best Gifts Are Not Under the Tree." Very touching little essay that she writes. And certainly, as we said, we're trying to get in the Christmas spirit, but, you know, being from this area, being from this environment, being from this locale in the United States, you just expect cold weather. It just kind of jumpstarts you into feeling the Christmas spirit. I remember one year we spent Christmas in Dallas, one of the kids lived down in Dallas. Just a little bit different when it was 75 degrees and we were walking down the street on Christmas morning. Kind of, even though we had a fireplace, we had that going, even though it was much too warm to use it. But it got you in the mood. It got you in the feeling of Christmas. And with friends and family gathering together, that, of course, is the reason that we do it. And making sure that we spend some time, whether it's Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, at church, which really should be, the reason for the season. Another reason, a story that I came across, very interesting. And is this coincidence? Maybe not. Story of a man who's telling us, "I was driving home from a meeting this evening about 5, stuck in traffic on Colorado Boulevard, and the car started to choke and splutter and die. I barely managed to coast into a gas station, glad only that I would not be blocking traffic and would have a somewhat warm spot to wait for the tow truck. Car wouldn't even turn over. Well, before I could make a call, I saw a woman walking out of the Quickie Mart building, and it looked like she slipped on some ice and fell into a gas pump, so I got out to see if she was okay. When I got there, it looked more like she had been overcome by sobs than that she had fallen. She was a young woman who really looked haggard with dark circles under her eyes. She dropped something as I helped her up, and I picked it up to give it to her. It was a nickel. At that moment, everything kind of came into focus for me. The crying woman, the ancient Suburban crammed full of stuff with 3 kids in the back, one in a car seat, and the gas pump reading $14.95. I asked her if she was okay and if she needed help, and she kept saying, "I don't want my kids to see me crying." So we stood on the other side of the pump from her car. She said she was driving to California and that things were very hard for her right now. So I asked, "And you were praying?" that made her back away from me a little, but I assured her I was not a crazy person and said, "He heard you, and he sent me." I took out my card and swiped it through the card reader on the pump so she could fill up her car completely. And while it was fueling, walked next door to the McDonald's and bought 2 big bags of food, some gift certificates for more, and a big cup of coffee. She gave the food to the kids in the car, who attacked it like wolves, and we stood by the pump eating fries and talking a little. She told me her name and that she lived in Kansas City. Her boyfriend left 2 months ago, and she had not been able to make ends meet. She knew she wouldn't have money to pay rent January 1st, and finally, in desperation, she had finally called her parents, with whom she had not spoken in about 5 years. They lived in California and said she could come live with them and try to get on her feet there. So she packed up everything she owned in the car. She told the kids they were going to California for Christmas, but not that they're going to live there. I gave her my gloves, a little hug, and said a quick prayer with her for safety in the road. As I was walking over to my car, she said, "So, are you like an angel or something?" This definitely made me cry. I said, "Sweetie, at this time of year, angels are really busy, so sometimes God uses just regular people." It was so incredible to be part of someone else's miracle. But of course, you guessed it, when I got in my car, it started right away and got me home with no problem. I'll put it in the shop tomorrow to check, but I suspect the mechanic won't find anything wrong. Sometimes the angels fly close enough to you that you can hear the flutter of their wings. Maybe it's a time for all of us during this Christmas season to be an angel to someone, anonymously or publicly. It's always a good reason, Christmas time, sometimes to give gifts for no other reason than it is Christmas. Sometimes you wouldn't necessarily take that initiative with some people, and some people find it hard to accept that. But my response has always been, it's Christmas time, it's a good reason to do that, so why not? Little random acts of kindness are good for everybody, I think, sometimes. Not only for them, but for us. Some Christmas traditions. One is the traditions of wreaths. Evergreen wreaths have been part of seasonal activity since ancient times, when revelers at solstice celebrations displayed aromatic greenery as a symbol of enduring life in the midst of winter. The custom of using wreaths as holiday decorations arrived in the American colonies with 18th century German and Swedish settlers. By the late 19th century, thanks to Charles Dickens and other Victorian champions of Christmas, holiday wreaths conveyed festive good wishes on the front doors of homes across the country. I was mentioning about Christmas stockings. I had the opportunity this last week to, I was sitting in line in the Hallmark store, buying some of those great Hallmark ornaments, which are terrific. Some light up, some play music. The story of Christmas stockings. The tradition of hanging stockings by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there began long before Clemency Moore penned his famous 19th century poem. According to one legend, the custom dates to 4th century Turkey, where the benevolent St. Nicholas paid late night visits to the homes of needy children. His gifts, gold coins tossed down the chimneys, often landed in stockings hung to dry by the fireplace. Very interesting. So the couple of Christmas traditions. This is interesting. Some of the 12 films of Christmas, the top grossing film since 1980. Most popular Christmas film, How the Grinch Stole Christmas in 2000. Interesting. The Santa Claus, number two. That was a great, of course they had Santa Claus 2 and Santa Claus 3, but the first one was just terrific. I remember the beginning of the show, you see a ladder, and it came from the Rose Suchick Ladder Company. The Polar Express. Elf was very popular. Christmas Carol in 2009. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which you see that interminably on all the cable stations now. The Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton's movie. Scrooged, of course, a very funny movie, and Christmas with the Cranks. The book was better than a movie, but the movie was funny. So a lot of things to do in and around Christmas. We're going to play a little music from our friend Jim Brickman. We usually have Jim around the holidays because he's in Chicago, but he's not around this year. But nevertheless, he'll be in around for Valentine's Day. We usually talk to him then. From his CD, Christmas Romance, one of the classics, I'll Be Home for Christmas. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Jim Brickman, I'll Be Home for Christmas. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. It is Christmas Eve in Nuremberg, Germany, and Dr. Stahlbaum is giving a party for his children, Clara and Fritz. Godfather Drosselmeyer arrives bringing presents and amuses the children with mechanical dolls. To Clara, he gives a nutcracker in the shape of a toy soldier. The spiteful Fritz breaks it, but Drosselmeyer mends it at once. The party goes on, grown-ups and children enjoying themselves until Clara falls asleep, clutching her present and dreams. And magically, she dreams of the battle with the Mouse King, her nutcracker as he turns into a handsome young prince, the Snow Queen, the Sugar Plum Fairy in the Land of the Sweets, and the classic music of Tchaikovsky, as Mr. Joffrey describes in a commentary he wrote on the nutcracker. It is through Dr. Drosselmeyer's magic and love that this never-ending dream of Christmas transports Clara and enables each of us to revisit the land of innocence, our childhood. Kick up your holiday celebrations with the Joffrey Ballet's annual production of Robert Joffrey's The Nutcracker, America's number one nutcracker. The world-renowned Joffrey Ballet once again transforms the auditorium theater into a winter wonderland full of magical toys and waltzy snowflakes during the 25th annual production of Robert Joffrey's The Nutcracker, one of Chicago's favorite holiday traditions. Robert Joffrey's The Nutcracker has been delighting audiences both young and old since its first Chicago performance in 1996. The Nutcracker is presented in 20 performances at the Auditorium Theater of University, 50 East Congress Parkway, through December 27th. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, world-renowned dancer, having performed with the legendary Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn, teacher, mentor, member of the Royal Ballet, former ballet master of the San Francisco Ballet, visionary in the world of dance, and the artistic director of the world-renowned Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Tchaikovsky's classic The Nutcracker through December 27th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress at Michigan, our good friend, Mr. Ashley Weider. Ashley, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, it's great to be on the show. I've got a little bit of a cold. Because we've been so busy. But anyway, it's great to be on your show.
It's always a pleasure, and I had the same thing. I just bombarded myself with vitamin C and got rid of it.
There we go. That's what I took loads of that this morning.
Well, you know, it's that time of year, and I'm so excited. I'm excited for you, but, you know, I'm kind of excited for myself. I was telling Brian a little earlier, I'm able to take my granddaughter for the first time to come to the Joffrey Ballet's production of The Nutcracker this Sunday, and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing you. I know that we're going to give you a backstage tour.
Well, she'll love it, and so will we. But what a great time of year. It's like a tradition that puts everybody in the Christmas spirit. The Nutcracker starts with the Joffrey.
I think it's a great way to start the holidays. And I think that, you know, we have a lot of families that come and see the performance. And it certainly is for everyone, from, you know, young boys and girls to grandparents. I think that it's a great way for people to be together and share in the magic of the production.
You know, you see so many people. You see young people. You see parents and grandparents because they remember when they enjoyed seeing the Nutcracker for the first time, and that tradition continues timelessly.
Absolutely. And, we know that, you know, there is something. You can look at the Nutcracker on so many different levels, whether it's just the story and the magic of the dancing, but the company are performing so well with the Cleveland Orchestra. So we're ready for Chicago.
You know, it's interesting to me, and I'm looking at the timeline of the Nutcracker's genealogy. The story itself was written in 1816 by E.T.A. Hoffman, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. In 1844, the story was revised by Alexander Dumas, of course, who wrote The Three Musketeers and Count of Monte Cristo. Tchaikovsky starts writing in about 1890, 1892. It premieres. The first time it was presented was at your old San Francisco Ballet in 1944. Balanchine takes it in 1954. And then in 1987, at the University of Iowa, that's the first time Robert Joffrey and Mr. Arpino put it together.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, it's quite amazing when, in case your listeners don't know, that when it premiered in Russia, it was not a popular ballet.
Really?
And people did not like the fact that there were children in it. And it just seems that, you know, it has become such a popular ballet, and it is definitely about the children. And I think that it has had many different, the story has been told many different ways, and I think that Robert Joffrey, he had had the workings for a Nutcracker in his mind for about 10 or 15 years before it actually came to fruition in 1987.
And his version is more like a Currier and Ives type of version of the Nutcracker. It's an old-time Christmas party, and here we are.
Absolutely. You know, his apartment in New York, he collected old Victorian dolls.
Really?
And I think that was his kind of way of getting into the story of the Nutcracker, which was that it's all about the dolls and the dolls coming to life.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's Clara's dream, and when she's given the Nutcracker doll, so do all the other dolls that are given out to the children at the party. They all become the divertissement for the second act. And I think the other thing about Robert Joffrey's production is that in his mind, he saw himself as Drosselmeyer, and he saw Clara as the audience.
Okay.
And so it was about Drosselmeyer being the one to create the magic that Clara can watch. And I think that he felt that it's a metaphor for how the audience feels when they come to a performance, that we create the magic that is taking them on a journey.
And it certainly is magical. This is one of Tchaikovsky's three great ballets, Swan Lake and, of course, The Sleeping Beauty being the other two. And it's a blend of a lot of different types of music. You have Chinese people on the stage with the divertissements, as you said, and Spanish and Russian and so forth.
Arabian coffee.
Gives everybody a feel for the different types of countries from which this is part of this whole ballet.
Absolutely. It was a journey, you know, around the world. It's a little bit like the World's Fair in Chicago. Yeah.
Now, is it a difficult... Do you have a difficult time choosing the dancers for this?
No, I think, you know, because we're a company year-round, mm-hmm. and I think that what the Nutcracker allows is it allows for many people in the company to take on many different roles. And I think that because we do 20 or so performances a year, it's really great to keep giving people challenges. And like I said, the company, through getting those opportunities, actually have really grown as a company. So I'm all for it. The only thing, it takes a lot of logistics with rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it really takes the time.
Now, you've danced in this yourself, and you danced with the Joffrey in the Nutcracker, right?
I was in the very first performance of the Nutcracker at the Joffrey Ballet in Iowa City, and I was the Snow King and the father.
Wow, that's terrific.
So it's interesting that, you know, because I was at San Francisco Ballet before I came back to take over the Joffrey, and mm-hmm. I danced in Lou Christensen's production of the Nutcracker for many years there. And I grew up on Rudolf Nureyev's production of the Nutcracker at the Royal Ballet in London. So I've certainly had my fair share of performances.
Now, is a Nutcracker for most ballet companies the engine that drives the rest of the season?
Do you know, it accounts for a very large proportion of our earned revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is very important from that point of view. I would say that for most companies, it's probably about a 40% of their overall budget. In terms of ticket revenue for the year. So that's a huge proportion of it.
You know, it's always something we enjoy, and certainly something, as you said, using the word magical, that everyone in Chicago enjoys. What do you bring to it every year, Ashley? Something, having been involved in it, having danced in it, having directed it, and, of course, now being the artistic director of the Joffrey, what do you bring new to it every year?
I think it's about trying to keep the values at the highest level. So whether they're production values in terms of what are the transitions for every scene and what is the detail with the lighting and how does that lighting help each scene move forward. So I think that it's that. It's about that we keep refurbishing the costumes so that they look really, you know, fresh. And I think particularly for me, you know, obviously the way it's danced is very important. And I think that the company have really worked hard on it. And I think because I was in it originally, is that to know the idea that both Robert Joffrey and Gerald Alpino had, it makes it very easy for me to be in rehearsal with the company and to really look at what is the intention of the choreography and to keep that, you know, really fresh and really honest, that it doesn't become contrived or affected, that it's beautiful, pure dancing.
You know, it always is, and it's something that is such a great tradition, as I said before, and it continues the legacy. Of course, the winter engagement coming up on the threshold, something to look forward to. We can't forget that.
Well, we've got a lot coming up in our winter program. We have Jerome Robbins' Interplay, and we also have Twyla Tharp's 9 Sinatra Songs, which I know will be a great hit with Chicago. And we also have a world premiere by Stanton Welsh called Son of Chamber Symphony. And we're also, in honor of Gerard Arpino's 90th birthday, we're reviving his beautiful pas de deux called Sea Shadow, which has not been seen in Chicago for many, many years. So I think it's a packed program, and it's a fun program. So I encourage everyone that if you only have seen the Joffrey dance the Nutcracker, it would be great to come and see us do something else. And then in April, we're doing La Lubavitch's full-length dramatic contemporary ballet, Othello.
That'll be exciting. And if people get a taste of the Joffrey by seeing the Nutcracker, want to come back without a doubt.
I hope so.
Evidently, you can leave the Nutcracker, but the Nutcracker may never leave you. The ballet's rhythms and a host of associated memories don't disappear. They just get filed away in a part of the brain and released in flashbacks filled with sometimes early memories and emotions. And, of course, there's the whole Christmas thing. The Nutcracker serves up an idealized Christmas on a platter full of treats that everyone has been promised at one time or another by our parents or by books and movies and TV specials. Christmas can be a joyful and problematic holiday for nearly everyone. It's not religious enough for some. It's too religious for others. It's lonely for those without family, and it's too full of relatives for those who have had enough of being known by a childhood nickname. There's pressure to spend money, to commune, to be festive, and the holidays can become a time of heightened expectations and recurring disappointments. The Nutcracker, however, is simpler. Like Christmas, it always comes around in December. But no one expects quite so much from a ballet, so its gifts can be discovered in a more relaxed manner. It provides for all of us a small oasis of beauty, inspiration, and togetherness for the Christmas season. The world-renowned Joffrey Ballet once again transforms the Auditorium Theater into a winter wonderland full of magical toys and waltzing snowflakes during the 25th annual production of Robert Joffrey's The Nutcracker at the Auditorium Theater, Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress Parkway, through December 27th. On the line with us right now is the artistic director of the Joffrey, our good friend Ashley Weider. Ashley, maybe a phone number or website if people like to get some information?
You can definitely go to our website, which is joffrey.org, and you can also go to Ticketmaster, or if you are downtown, you can stop by our own box office, which is at 10 East Randolph, which is our headquarters. So there are many ways to get tickets to the Nutcracker. And as you were saying, Kevin, earlier about Christmas and how for some people it's a very lonely time and there are lots of expectations, I think the thing about going to see the Nutcracker or going to a performance is that it doesn't ask for anything except to really enjoy something and share in that enjoyment together. And I think that's a really beautiful thing when there is so much pressure on people these days to deliver, you know, spectacular gifts. And I think sharing things is a much more beneficial, more beautiful way.
And in that, I will say thank you, Ashley, for sharing the loveliness and the beauty of the Nutcracker with Chicago for so many years. You've touched some you don't even know, touched the hearts and the souls and the minds of a lot of people, a lot of adults, and a lot of young people that come to see the Nutcracker. So from our audience and our listeners and everybody in Chicago and the people that come to see the Nutcracker, to all of your team, your administrative staff and yourself and the dancers, thank you for making Christmas so special for all of us.
Well, it's a pleasure. It really is. And we wish all of your listeners a very, very happiest of holidays and for a very prosperous new year.
And I will look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
That will be great, Kevin.
Thank you, my pal.
Okay, thank you very much.
Get well.
Okay,
thanks,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ashley Weider, the artistic director and a good friend of the Joffrey Ballet. The Nutcracker through December 27th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress at Michigan. For information, 800-982-2787. Or go on the website for the Joffrey, because it's a great way to introduce young people to the ballet. Certainly a great story and for many, many years. And the Joffrey does it like no other ballet group in the world. And the music from Tchaikovsky, very, very special. I have endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly and no wish to lay it. Written in December of 1843 and signed, their faithful friend and servant, Charles Dickens. Marley was dead to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate. And something wonderful is happening at the Goodman Theater. Goodman Theater marks its 35th anniversary of A Christmas Carol, a holiday tradition enjoyed by more than a million Chicagoans and dubbed a joyous present for the entire family. Goodman Theater associate producer Steve Scott directs the anniversary production, starring one of Chicago's best actors, bar none, Larry Yendo, in his fifth run as Ebenezer Scrooge, a performance hailed as stellar and commanding. A Christmas Carol runs through December 29th in the Goodman's Albert Theater. And on the line with us right now is the star of stage, screen, and television, having been seen here in Chicago at Timeline Theater, Northlight Theater, and the Ravinia Festival. Jordan has appeared off-Broadway in New York and on television in As the World Turns, one of the brightest young stars in the world of theater, and now starring in the role of the young Scrooge in the classic at the Goodman Theater, Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol, through December 29th, 170 North Dearborn. Mr. Jordan Brown. Jordan, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Why, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, and it's great to enjoy your performance and everybody else's in one of the classics in Chicago, A Christmas Carol, Jordan.
Thank you so much, and I got to tell you, it's a real honor to be a first-timer on such a lovely and long-standing tradition here in the Chicago Theaterland area.
You know, we all read it, we've all lived it, we've all seen it on stage and screen, and now to be acting in it, it's got to be a big treat.
Yeah, it really is. It's a one-of-a-kind experience, you know. And you know, I got to say that there's such a loyal fan base here in this city. 35 years, the Goodman's been doing this production, and, you know, people have seen our production this year who saw the very first production 35 years ago. And, you know, I think it's been a real delight to see all the different actors and artists and directors who have brought their interpretation of it to the stage, and it's pretty surreal, and it's been a real treat.
Well, decades and decades, a century and more ago, of course, Charles Dickens wrote this. He was traveling around London a couple months before he put pen to paper, getting ideas together, and still here we are. You know, so much time has passed, and we still enjoy it, we still look forward to it, and generations make it timeless.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, that's the lovely thing about such a timeless tale is, you know, it is constantly interpreted and reinterpreted, and it's got, you know, aspects of it that stick, you know, and it's really just about, you know, being good to your fellow man or woman and taking care of each other and locking back into the tradition of Christmas and the holiday season and what that means, you know. And I have to say that a fellow actor of mine in the show made a very good point. He said this is the one production I've been a part of in my long career as an actor where you literally see the message carrying across and you see the difference it makes with the audiences. You know, we stand out after the performance at the Goodman and we collect money and donations for Season of Concern, and it really goes a long way. And just to see the smiles on people's faces when they come out of the theater really, really makes it worthwhile.
Well, you know, Jordan, when you're on stage and you have that feeling, and you've been on many stages before, you've had good performances and not so good performances, and some of you have knocked it out of the park, and some of you said, I kind of didn't have it what I had the last time. This one, those young people, you can see that instant gratification that they're getting being part of the story, especially in an intimate venue like the Goodman.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the reason that you go into this trade. You know, I mean, it's the most enlivening thing, especially in live theater, to be up on that stage. I mean, because the audience is the other character in the show. You know, we've got a gigantic cast and lovely people to work with. And then when the audience comes in, it adds that last missing element. And I tell you, you know, I come down also as the ghost of Christmas Future.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And being in that cloak, that giant hooded cloak, and hanging up in the air for 20 minutes, I tell you, it's worthwhile when I come down and you hear the squeals of joy and terror when that moment happens, because everybody's so locked in and invested with this story, no matter how many times they've seen it, and it really, really makes it worthwhile.
I'm sure you don't come out in that costume in the lobby to collect money.
That would not be so popular. No.
You know, this story is, it's Christmas time is a time of hope, and this is a very hopeful Christmas story. It's a story of redemption. Scrooge is a miser. He becomes generous. He has a small heart, and now he has a big heart. And I think it touches us all because we're all participatory about this kind of feeling at this time of year. That's why we make it so important to kind of come and see the Christmas Carol.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, it's good to relearn that lesson, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, I'd heard other cast members mentioning this who have returned to this production, you know, for the fifth or eighth or twelfth time,
sure,
and
sure.
They said it's almost like relearning a lesson, you know, and coming back to this and remembering why they've returned to it for so many years in a row. And, you know, Steve Scott, the director, made a really good point when we had our first table read at our very first rehearsal. He said, this show is bigger than all of us. You know,
yeah.
It's bigger than any one person in the production. We come to it as a team, and we have to come to it with our the feelings that it ignites within us, because it is such an important, large, all-encompassing lesson for us all, and it touches hearts. It certainly does.
A couple thoughts that a writer put down on paper. It should be said that this is a scary show in the deepest sense of that word, but also a joyous one. On the one hand, it deals with selfishness, greed, the emotional scars that can come with poverty, and the fears of mortality. On the other hand, it is all about the power of love, the rewards of generosity of spirit as much as of purse, and redemption. It is full of ghosts, some benign, some terrifying, and it is full of family life in all its guises. It is also full of music. It touches everyone because it's such a family-oriented gathering, and we gather together and we experience and live what Scrooge is living vicariously, but we still experience it.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I think family is another really important theme of the show, and driving that home, you know, because, you know, we come together, and I personally come from a very large family. I'm the oldest of five children,
mm-hmm.
and my family's all originally from Kansas City, Kansas, and they're all there now, and you know, I every chance I get, I try to go home for the holidays and enjoy my family and spend time with them because, you know, I sure as heck don't get enough time with them as it is. And, you know, it kind of makes you reexamine your own life a little bit. And I think that that's what the most important and influential stories continue to do.
Have they been able to come up and enjoy your performance?
They sure have. My mother and one of my brothers did come up, and they loved it. Absolutely enjoyed it. It was one of their favorite productions I've been a part of, that I was lucky to be a part of.
That's great. That's great. Now, you've performed in and around the Chicagoland area, some great places, as I said in the introduction, Timeline and Northlight and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to spend a little more time in Chicago, or are you going to go back to New York?
Oh, no, I will be in Chicago for a little while longer. I came from New York City, and
mm-hmm.
I really love the theater community here, and I love the scene, and I think that it has a lot to offer a young actor such as myself, and I've been blessed to be a part of the productions I have been so far, and I have so many great relationships with people here, and I'm lucky to be here. I tell you, I hope it continues.
Well, you know, I think that people say we're the second city. I always take exception to that because I think we have opportunities here for theater, young people, and very talented actors, which are all around us. And the theaters that we have here in Chicago give everyone the opportunity to take advantage of that, and I think this is a great place to be.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. There's a lot of really fantastic original work that premieres here as well that people forget, you know, because, you know, if it's good enough, it goes to Broadway and New York, and then people forget where it actually came from. And the city of Broad Shoulders certainly has a lot to offer when it concerns theater and you know, plays and playwrights. I think it is a one-of-a-kind city, and I'm absolutely privileged to be here.
And besides, your wife has one of the most popular Pilates studios in Chicago, so you got to stick around.
Absolutely. Six Packs in Chicago in the South Loop. I got a little shameless plug there, but, yeah, she's doing a great job, and I'm lucky to be with her, and we're lucky to be here.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, and join me, Jordan. God bless us, everyone. Goodman Theater marks its 35th anniversary of A Christmas Carol, a holiday tradition enjoyed by more than a million Chicagoans and dubbed a joyous present for the entire family. Through December 29th in the Goodman's Albert Theater, on the line with us right now, one of the stars of A Christmas Carol, Jordan Brown. Jordan, I'm going to give a phone number for people who like tickets, 312-443-3800. I will wish you and your family in Kansas City or wherever a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, my pal, and continued success in Chicago. I'm sure I'm going to be seeing you around in whatever productions you're successful in, and we'll keep on each other's radar.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me today.
Take care, Jordan.
All right. Bye-bye.
Jordan Brown, who portrays the young Scrooge in the Charles Dickens classic at the Goodman Theater, A Christmas Carol, through December 29th. For information, 312-443-3800. That's a perfect example of the enthusiasm and the energy of young people in the theater in Chicago. And certainly Jordan is one of those young actors who are doing such a terrific job. As I said, he's been at the Timeline Theater, Northlight, and I'm sure his future is very bright. But go down to the Goodman and enjoy his performance in A Christmas Carol. Provision Theater presents The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey, backed by popular demand. After a critically acclaimed world premiere production last season, this beautiful, moving holiday treat is backed by popular demand. The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey, based on one of America's most loved children's books, stars Jim Rank as a woodcarver, Jonathan Toomey, a recluse with a secret past. A widowed mother, company member Susan Moniz, and her young son move into town and commission the ill-tempered woodcarver to create a replica of a nativity set given to the boy by his father. Their relationship starts out a rocky one, but soon blossoms into something that helps them both to move on. This story of love, redemption, and above all, hope, will make this beloved musical a holiday classic for years to come. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, nationally recognized performer, accomplished actor in both dramatic and musical theater, teacher, mentor, and the founder and artistic director of Chicago's own Provision Theater, now presenting the world premiere adaptation of The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey at Provision Theater, 1001 Roosevelt Road at Morgan through December 23rd. Our good pal, Mr. Tim Gregory. Timmy, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Kevin, how are you? It's good to chat with you again.
It's always a pleasure, and what a delightful time with Mr. Rank and the job he does as Jonathan Toomey.
Yeah, yeah. He's tremendous. Did you see the show, by the way?
I was there yesterday.
You were there yesterday?
I was there yesterday for the matinee, and it was just terrific. And this guy does a terrific job. You got to find something else for him.
Yeah, you know, when he auditioned last year, I knew of Jim. I knew him. I'd met him a couple of times, but I had never seen him perform. And he came in an audition and just blew me away.
Yeah.
He opened his mouth, and of course that voice is just incredible. And I knew immediately, I was like, that's our Jonathan Toomey. So
I don't think there's anybody could see this without bringing a tear to their eye. And I think, David, that's a mark of great theater because it elicits such emotion.
Yeah, you know, it's really beautiful story, not just for adults, but for kids, too. You know, half of the cast is made up of children.
Mm-hmm.
And although, you know, these kids are very good, they certainly pull their weight within the show. So it's a show that, you know, is certainly accessible for both adults and children, and capable of moving both. And I think we do that with this show.
You know, Susan Moniz is just a special person. And, of course, she's been a member of the ensemble for many years and is a good friend of yours. But certainly just such a talented woman. And her voice just lends itself to this role perfectly.
Yeah, you know, it's really too bad about her voice. It's she's got one of the best around.
Oh, boy.
The pieces, of course. You know, when she sings, it's just angelic.
Yeah.
And Mike Mahler, who did the music and lyrics, wrote a couple of new songs for this year.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they were not a part of the production last year. And the first time I heard them in rehearsal with Susan, it just kind of left me speechless for about 10 minutes. And now she's doing them, you know, four times a week and leaving audiences speechless as well.
And what's nice about it too, Tim, is this has become a tradition in Chicago. Some of our town's critics have noticed this and certainly spread the word that people have to come and see this and enjoy this and make this their Christmas tradition.
Yeah, you know, a lot of families like the idea of doing something traditional for the holidays, and this has now become our tradition, as well as a number of families who are coming to see it. This is the second year we've done it. We'll be doing it again next year. Chris Jones of the Tribune named us one of the top 10 holiday shows of the season. So we really feel like we've got something here to offer the Chicago community that will enable families to start a tradition for years to come.
When you do this year in and year out, how do you make it new for people who have seen it before? How do you bring something that's they haven't seen before and give it that new energy, infuse that new enthusiasm into it?
That's a great question. Every year it's going to be different because the cast alters a little bit every year, and so each cast brings their own special things to the table. And so that's inherent within, you know, doing it year in and year out. It'll be slightly different, but that's also part of the appeal, because if it is a tradition, you know, when you come back every year, that if you were moved the previous year, you'll be moved again. And so that's why you come back. So it's good in both of those regards.
You know, I know you're going to think I'm kidding here, but I'm not. I'm being serious. You have played so many different roles, and you've, as I said in the introduction, are accomplished in the musical theater. Have you thought about playing the role of Jonathan Toomey yourself?
You know, when Mike and I were originally writing it, I do recall actually sending him an email saying, so we're going to have auditions. Do you have any suggestions about people we could bring in to audition for Jonathan Toomey? And he shot back, you? And I was flattered by, but I don't, first off, it's hard to be in a show that you're also, you know, writing
sure,
and directing.
Sure.
But also, I just don't think I have the pipes for it. You've got to have some major pipes like Jim Rank, and mm-hmm. I think Jim does such a fine job that now I think I'll stay away from it for good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he might be identified with this role from now on.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
What's in store for Provision Theater's Time Moves On? Of course, this is a great success, and what's the next one coming up?
Well, we have two more shows the rest of this season. The next show coming up is called Fish Eyes, and it's a very funny, interesting look at the disciples, Peter and Andrew, and in a modern-day telling of their story. And so Rod Armentrout, who's a company member, is in it, and it's just a really wonderful, poignant, and funny look, a contemporary look at that. And then we finish up our season with the wonderful theatrical presentation of Spoon River Anthology. And Leah Mortensen, who is a company member, she's going to be in that. So we're really excited about that. That's going to be a new adaptation as well, with new music and all kinds of wonderful, interesting surprises within that.
Well, you know, the Fish Eyes, of course, Peter and Andrew were brothers, correct?
Yes.
And their father was sitting there one time, and he says, "Now you're going to leave this good business as a fisherman, and you're going to do what?" And there they go. Of course, it ended up pretty well, but I'm sure they had second thoughts when it started out. You know?
Those second thoughts continued for quite some time until eventually they realized, "Oh, okay,
you're doing okay."
Yeah, we
get it. And Spoon River, of course, that's a world premiere.
Yeah, it is. It's, of course, based on the Edgar Lee Masters poetry cycle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wrote, I think it was about 240-something monologues. And, of course, you can't do the whole thing. I mean, you could, but it would be about 6 hours of material, and who wants to sit through that? So we have to be very selective about what we're choosing out of that, and then we're also going to find a way to kind of splice some of those monologues together to actually create a couple of scenes as well. With the original music that we're doing for the show, it could be a really exciting project.
You're really enjoying the writing part of theater, aren't you, Timmy?
I am. You know, yeah. Kevin, it's kind of surprised me. If you would have said, you know, 10 years ago, you will get away from acting so much and you'll be writing and directing for the lion's share of your time, I would have said that's impossible. But that's exactly what's happened. This is, you know, my journey has taken me in a completely different direction of what I thought it would be. and I am totally okay with that. As a matter of fact, I'm very happy. As I tell people, never worked harder, never been happier.
And I would imagine that the most surprised are those creative writing teachers in high school that they gave you C's and D's.
Creative writing teachers? I never even took that.
Even more remarkable. No, it's true. You're doing a terrific job. You know, you do what you love, and everybody's enjoying it also, and I think that's the great part of it. Provision Theater Company is devoted to producing works of hope, reconciliation, and redemption, works that challenge us to explore a life of meaning and purpose. Provision Theater Company has celebrated numerous Joseph Jefferson Award nominations for their critically acclaimed production. There are beloved Christmas shows that have been around for decades, and then there are the new additions to the annual roster that will certainly reach such status. The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey fits the latter. Adapted by Provision Theater Artistic Director Tim Gregory, the musical, which debuted last year, is based on the award-winning children's book by Susan Wojcicki. The music and lyrics are by multi-talented company member Michael Mahler. The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey, through December 23rd at the Provision Theater, 1001 Roosevelt Road at Morgan, through December 23rd. On the line with us right now is our good pal, the Artistic Director of Provision Theater, Mr. Tim Gregory. Timmy, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some information?
Yeah, if people want to get tickets, they can call 312-455-0066, or they can go online, visit our site at provisiontheater.org.
You know, always a pleasure, my pal. I know you're out of town directing A Christmas Carol and bringing that joy of that play to a lot of people, but certainly have brought a lot of joy with The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey to the Chicagoland area, and I thank you for that, as do all the audiences, as did the audience that I enjoyed it with yesterday.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. It's great chatting with you again, and Merry Christmas.
Always a pleasure. Merry Christmas, my good friend.
Okay, you
too. Take care. Tim Gregory, the Artistic Director of Provision Theater, very, very talented man, very talented actor, and has become very, very talented writer and playwright, has done such great work and continues to do so at the Provision Theater. I'm very honored to serve on the board there. But if you can, stop by. It's a new Christmas story that will become a tradition. The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey at Provision Theater, 1001 Roosevelt Road at Morgan, through December 23rd. For information, 866-811-4111. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Ashley Weider, the Artistic Director of the Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Tchaikovsky's classic, The Nutcracker, through December 27th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress at Michigan. For information, 800-982-2787. What a great way to introduce young people to the ballet, The Nutcracker. Jordan Brown, starring as the young Scrooge in The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. In the classic at the Goodman Theater, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, through December 29th, 170 North Dearborn. For information, 312-443-3800, one of Chicago's great young performers. And finally, our good pal, Tim Gregory, the founder and artistic director of Chicago's own Provision Theater, now presenting the world premiere adaptation of The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey at Provision Theater, 1001 Roosevelt Road at Morgan, through December 23rd. Of course, that's right next to UIC and Kitty Corner from St. Ignatius. For information, 866-811-4111. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But
in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends.